the EFL. It's the Football League podcast, still putting its sides back together after those hilarious club social media April Fools. Coming up, it's crunch time in the Championship. Evans, help us. Steve's out of a job. And does anyone actually want to win League Two? Powered by QuinBet, this is What the EFL. And we are back with another show for you. Busy midweek in Leagues One and Two, which we'll reflect on and we'll look ahead to the best bits of the Championship too. Before I introduce my co-host, let me remind you that our partners QuinBet have a new offer. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, QuinBet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quinn Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Before we get going, I should probably tell you who we are. I've got Adrian Clark with me as always. How are you doing, Clarky?
Hello. Yeah, I'm good. Yeah. My wife she was halfway through falling for a football related April Fools when it dawned on her what the date was. It was around, we'd been sent something on a WhatsApp group around tackling being banned in kids football. And she was like, "Hey, have you seen this? How's this going to work?" Oh, no, I've done it. I've bit and haven't I? So, yeah. So that was quite funny. Yeah.
Peaked 35 years ago, didn't it? Sam Parkin with Ian Rush on the front cover of Shoot magazine in Everton.
That is good. I did enjoy the Port Vale third kit unveiling in Stoke vertical stripes, which I went for. And I only went for it because the first response was from a Port Vale fan who'd been sucked in. Unbelievably. So it did take me a few seconds to remember, but I thought that was quite a good one because who knows?
Decent,
well,
yeah.
Port Vale may very well have had a red and white kit in 1885. Who knows?
Good stuff. All right, let's kick things off proper then. We'll have a look at the midweek action. Just the one game in the Championship this midweek, that because Derby and Preston couldn't go at it at the weekend because of Preston's involvement in the FA Cup. Big win this, Clarkie, for Derby. 2-0, Forsyth and Yates the scorers. Three shots on target in the whole match between both teams, but John Eustace isn't bothered about that because his team are out of the bottom three for now.
Yeah, massive, isn't it, for Derby County, for John Eustace. Just the belief in the dressing room would have skyrocketed, wouldn't it, the last month or so. It is amazing what they're doing. It's going to be based around tactics that are gritty, that are solid, like they were in this game. I mean, to limit Preston to five shots, just one on target, is impressive, isn't it? I mean, the game was won and lost, raced basically on a purple patch just after half time with the two goals. Lovely poacher's goal off the thigh, I think it was, of Jerry Yates. That was nice from a knockdown inside the box. But yeah, and they also got a bit of luck, Derby. And maybe over the course of this season, they haven't had loads of it. But here, there was a goal. I mean, the whistle went quite early, but there's every chance that Preston would have scored in the first half for an offside flag that shouldn't have gone up. And then they probably should have had a pen later on. I mean, I don't know how it wasn't given for Preston in the second half. So, yes, could easily have gone the other way. But Derby, like as you say, don't care. Me and Sam were pretty bullish on their chances of survival. And I think, yeah, probably even more so now.
Came into almost the must-win category this, didn't it, Sam? I mean, they're at Swansea this weekend, which they could get something from, but then they've got Burnley at home, Pompey away, Luton, massive game. Got to go to West Brom, got to go to Hull before Stoke on the last day of the season. So, yeah, four wins in a row, but maybe this the most crucial of the lot.
Yeah, a lot of teams there with a great deal to play for. Maybe Pompey will be secure with their Championship status by the time they meet. But yeah, that was another colossal victory for them. Still such a threat from set pieces, I think the most in the division. So along with what Clarkey just said in terms of the style and the blueprint, that will continue to be their strong suit as well as they look for survival. Goal difference a lot better than the bottom three as well, which could come into play. And let's just stop the season now, because the three that I predicted to lose their Championship status, currently occupying those positions, but long way to go. And I think the continuity as well in set up, the front two as well, all key really for John Eustace turning things around amazingly. Think of that QPR performance, what, 6 weeks or so ago, in the midst of a wretched run, obviously. The previous manager in charge during the lion's share of that, but they were woeful. They looked destined for the third tier. So what a turnaround.
Speaking of the third tier, it's somewhere Steve Evans no longer resides after his dismissal by Rotherham in midweek. Wrexham and Wickham, both dropped points in the automatic promotion race. Stockport and Bolton got big wins, as did Burton at the bottom. Crawley 3, Posh 4 was as bonkers as the tagline suggests, but none of those games have captivated us like the following. Starting with Bristol Rovers 1, Birmingham 2. Sam was on commentary for this one. Not news that the Blues are going up, but are Bristol Rovers going down? Jay Stansfield's late pen giving Birmingham the win over the Gas. Rovers just to place some 3 points above the drop zone, Sam. I mean, they're the story from this game, right?
Oh, Birmingham did not deserve to win this game. I think everything I've read would suggest the same from people of a Birmingham City persuasion. They were not at it, other than a really bright 5-10 minutes from the off. They got in down that right-hand side, which me and Clarkie have spoken about this season, with Dow tucking and Laird really high, to kind of build with that back three. Laird was really bright from the off. Keshi Anderson gets them in front, and obviously the narrative from our side and probably everyone watching was that this was going to be a Birmingham canter to a 3 or 4 nil victory, probably, given that Bristol Rovers had lost three on the spin and were coming in clearly bang out of form. But they were brilliant. They really were. There were some standout performances. Clinton Moeller at left back was excellent against the aforementioned Laird. Kofi Shaw, that's someone we're going to be talking about a lot, I think, on this podcast, or maybe not, because he'll probably be in the Premier League. 18-year-old midfield player, incredibly tenacious, but can play as well. He actually got withdrawn after about 65 minutes because he was on a silly yellow as well. Had he not been, he would have been really influential as Bristol Rovers looked to get a point. And I'm saving him till last, the best player on the pitch, Gatlin Odonka, on loan from Oxford. Left-footed centre-forward, been out for a period. I think this was only his second game back. He was colossal, leading the line, got a goal, possibly could have had a penalty, couple of other lovely marauding runs, a real handful for Clara and Davis at the heart of the Birmingham defence. So Bristol Rovers should have got something. They didn't. A slightly contentious penalty award for Stansfield's winner.
Enjoyed you calling it a modern day penalty.
Yeah, I was quite forthright with that, wasn't it? I regretted it as soon as I said it, but you know what I mean. I think you probably would have got away with it in my playing days. But now when the arm's out and it strikes the hand, they invariably get given. But he stuck it away, and it is another sign of a top team, isn't it? Not playing well at all, but still got the goal power, still got the star quality to find a way. Problem for Bristol Rovers is they go to Bolton next, and obviously Burton and Crawley on their heels, probably the other way round, have changed managers. One recently, one a few months ago, and have had incredible upturns. So I'm sure every supporter would have expected the games to run out. The problem is those guys are going to pick up points now. So Bristol Rovers are going to have to find a win or two. And I would imagine the trend will continue. They're better against the good sides, that they can rough up and put under pressure against the strong, robust sides in the division. They've got a big problem. So it's going to be fascinating to see which way it goes for them.
Yeah, I was at Birmingham on the Saturday when they walloped Shrewsbury, and that was really easy. You know, they were impressive that day. But yeah, this match, this win, even though it was jammy, 37th win of the season in all comps. It's a record. Birmingham City have never, ever won this many matches in a season. It's dreamland, isn't it, for the fans? And you look at it now, 6 wins from their last 8 games, and they beat Reading's record, which is the EFL record, of course, 106 points. Yeah, you'd fancy them to do it. I think 5 wins from 8, and they break the League One record that was set by Wolves 10 years ago. So I think now the motivation, aside from the Wembley game, is about making history for Birmingham. But it sounds like they'll have to play better than they did midweek.
Mm. double potentially on for them. Elsewhere, Blackpool just 3 points off the playoff pace after they beat Reading 3-0 at Bloomfield Road to boost their promotion hopes whilst denting their opponents. Sonny Kerry's brace helping end an 11-game unbeaten run for the Royals. Particularly frustrating for them, Clarkey, given that Reading had 63% possession but didn't muster so much as a shot on target.
No, 10 shots on target to nil it was. So you can't really have too many complaints if you're the Royals. Yeah, it's a bit of a walloping. You know, this on paper looked like a really good game, a competitive game between two teams that have been playing well and they're firing on all cylinders to try and steal that last playoff spot. But yeah, it's Blackpool that, even though they don't have a lot of the ball, they've got a really good spine, haven't they? They've got good centre halves. I think Adela Fire at the back on loan from Brighton's in really good form. Yeah, one of the centre halves, Ollie Casey, had a particularly good game here, dominant in both boxes. Yeah, down the middle, you've got Albie Morgan and Evans in the midfield, really strong, abrasive, but they can play as well. And up top, lots of experience, haven't they, with Niall Innes and Ashley Fletcher, who are they're striking up quite a nice combination. So yeah, look, Blackpool are no frills, you know, they get it wide, they, you know, they counter attack at speed, and they play the percentages, and you know, in this game they did it very well.
Maybe Steve Bruce is a master tactician after all. Have that, Dwight Gale. Elsewhere, Charlton responded brilliantly to their recent gubbing at Posh, which we spoke about. Since then, they're 2-for-2 following up their win against Huddersfield with a 2-1 success against Mansfield at Field Mill. So, Sam, they're 6 points off second place Wrexham. They've still got to go to Wickham and Wrexham, and they play Burton at home on the final day, which could also be big. I mean, there's an outside chance they could pinch second place, maybe?
Yeah, I probably can't see Birmingham and Wrexham dropping the required points to let them in. But I think I have read some people suggesting that it could be on. And when you look at, 15 wins in 22 games, I mean, that is sensational going. Obviously, at the Valley, they're incredibly strong and picking up regular victories away from home. So yeah, absolutely flying. I wouldn't say they were as poor as Birmingham in their away day victory midweek, but this wasn't a vintage Charlton performance. I think Mansfield buoyant after, I think, back-to-back wins for them kind of matched them up. It's a bit of a hybrid system that Charlton play. Is it a three? Is it a four? Nobody seems to really know, but they had the personnel back, Lloyd Jones apart, who I think everyone would have anticipated being a really big miss. McIntyre coming in on loan from Pompey and did brilliantly, having not had much game time. But Godden again, question marks definitely about him early part of the season. He's up to 14 now, 4-4, big goals as well. Don't know if you saw it, but it was handed to him on a plate from Louis Reed, who just didn't see him, passed it back. And to make matters worse for Reed, did you see the optical illusion at the other end? He had a curling effort, yeah, which looked like it's found his way.
Stuart Atwell would have given it if he'd been the referee.
Stuart Atwell would have given two. Yeah, so not his night, but yeah, comfortable finish for Godden and Campbell with a bit of star quality for the second goal. So a tough night for them, I think, against a tough opponent, but just all about the victory. And one other thing I noted, big Chucks and Ike hasn't scored since we saw him, Clarkey, against Rotherham, right, when I labelled him the best sub outside the Premier League. It's his first goal involvement since the 10th of October. So he's played a bit of a bit part. We know he doesn't start games, but that might just give them, yeah, something a little bit extra for the running, given my love for big Chucks.
So Charlton looking good. Mansfield 8 points above the drop zone. I caught Nigel Clough's post-match interview on Radio Nottingham when I was driving back from the Forest game on Tuesday, and he didn't half lay into his players, and it was sort of understandable because there were two pretty glaring errors. But yeah, I just wonder if it might be coming to an end, his time there. We shall see. Now, Adrian's picked out a trio of League Two games for us to discuss. I'm not going to put Sam in the awkward position of asking him how he felt about his old club Swindon scoring twice in stoppage time against his pals Wimbledon. So instead, we'll swiftly move on and ask, does anyone actually want to win League Two? Walsall and Doncaster shared the points. Bradford dropped them against Port Vale. That means Moore's men are in with a shout of taking the title. Clarkey, you love a stat. How's this for you? This was Port Vale's first win on a Tuesday night since March 2022.
I like it. It's a lot of Tuesday nights, isn't there? Since that have come and gone since then. So, congratulations to Vale. Now, this was really good. I mean, the first half was really, really good from Port Vale. I mean, Sam's seen a bit of Bradford, hasn't he, this season in the flesh and likes them. But I think they were just at it, Port Vale. It was really sort of built around energy and tempo and drive. Anyone that's seen the goals will have been really impressed, I'm sure. Brilliant team goals. Yeah, the first one, I loved it. It's a couple of passes, crisp forward passes between the lines, you know, brave passes that could have been cut out but weren't, to move it upfield. And then what a finish from Talage, who we've spoken about before. Yeah, it was a great goal, wasn't it? And the second goal was a nice team goal as well that ended with a header from the right wing back. So look, yeah, 4 wins from 5 now for Port Vale. All of those 4 wins, clean sheet wins. They had to graft, I think, second half. You know, Bradford came at them. They got a bit deep. The goalie needed to save a penalty, which he did.
Loved him pointing the way that he was going to dive and the ball was going to go. And then that's exactly what happened and he saved it. That is proper housery.
Yeah, I love housery. It shouldn't really even be called housery because a goalie, in my book, is well within their rights to try and put you off. If they're more worried about antics to put you off than they are their own technique, as an attacker, I'm okay with that. You know, concentrate on your own job, mate, would be my view as someone maybe taking a penalty. So, well done. Well done to him. Well done to Port Vale. It was a performance I think will have given the fans, you know, great hope and belief that they can get the top three and maybe even win the title. Possibly the best performance under Darren Moore, this. Really, really strong. And look, the stat that I always think of with Port Vale is headers. They've had more headed shots than anyone else in the league by 10. And I think they're second in terms of headed goals. And they got one in this game. So, you know, they're very, very dangerous whenever they put the ball into the mixer, Port Vale. So, yeah, well played them.
Parky, where do you think the table stands in relation to last year? Do you think that it's going to be more exciting, the finish, because there isn't those powerhouses in League Two? I'm just thinking about previous seasons when there's been clear favourites going into this season, and now there must be so many teams rubbing their hands together thinking, what an opportunity, because there isn't a Wrexham, Stockport, some other examples I'm sure there is from the last few years that were really short with the bookies.
Defo, yeah. I think, I mean, of the teams in the mix, I'd say that Donny are probably the ones that maybe expected it, and they're fifth, aren't they? Walsall's completely surprised. Bradford fans, even, you know, given their recent history, wouldn't have expected it. Port Vale, I don't know. Notts County, you know, different manager and whatnot. Wimbledon's a bonus. Grimsby, Crewe, Colchester. Yeah, it's, I mean, Chesterfield are still in the mix, aren't they? They're someone we'll talk about in a minute. Yeah, it's completely wide open. It is more exciting, I think. Really exciting. And I really hope that we go down to the last day with it as tight as it is at the moment, because you won't be able to take your eyes off these games. But yeah, based on this week, you're thinking, well, Port Vale and Notts County are looking good, but it'd be two different teams next time around. It's great.
Yeah, just 10 points between first and seventh at the moment. Not something that concerns Morecambe, but they gave life to their survival bid with a 2-0 home win against Cheltenham. Means they've earned back-to-back league wins for the first time this season. Helped, Sam, by Tranmere losing at Harrogate to mean that the gap is just 4 points now. They got Carlisle at home in a couple of weeks' time. Relatively favourable fixture list, you'd say. Is Derek Adams going to further cement his status as a legendary shrimp?
I would not be surprised at all if that was the case. I would second what you just said. I think it's slightly more favourable, their running, than Tranmere. Only marginally. They both play one top seven team, but they have the potential to be meeting quite a few sides with the flip-flops on and the beach balls out, that's for sure. Just another huge example of a team with such contrast in home and away form. They've won 6 out of their last 10 at home. I mean, that is not relegation fodder. 3 wins and 1 draw from their last 4. They're in great form away from home, lost 8 on the spin. So Carlisle, Salford, Harrogate going to be defining at the home ground. And I think much of this due to Liangol. I know it's quite simplistic, but the much travelled striker, he's 5 in his last 6, and he's missed a huge chunk of the season. He scored on the 28th of September, and then he was out until the 25th of January. So had they had him, and I think Hallam Hope as well, kind of in unison, then this could have been a much different season for Derek Adams and his side. But one of the best performances of their season against against Cheltenham, some other standout players, Callum Jones, Tom White, Adam Lewis, and I do give them a shot. I give them a shot probably because of the home form, and more so, love him or loathe him, because of the manager. And he just gets it there, doesn't he? And yeah, Tranmere seemed to be able to put a performance together, not back it up. There's not that consistency to drag them away from the mire.
No surprise. Liangol is in good form in front of goal. If he was Spanish, he'd have goal in his name. So Morecambe have got hope, but that is not a feeling which is in abundance at Carlisle right now, Clarkie. Two undefeated Chesterfield. Yeah. Means they're 9 points adrift, six to go. You wanted to give us some stats. I bet they're possession and shot-based and re-Chesterfield.
There's some wild numbers. Yeah, look, Carlisle, I think they're gone. Like, I think it was only last week, our last pod, where we talked about their win, and then it was a little bit of a fortuitous one, wasn't it, against Bromley? And then, you know, since then, a couple of defeats, but this was a shocker. Chesterfield had 38 shots. Carlisle had 4 touches in the opposition box. 59 for Chesterfield, 4 for Carlisle. 81% possession, successful passes. I like this one. 604 of them for Chesterfield, 79 for Carlisle. They did have 10 men. There was a bit of a the second half, Imbleton, bit of a naughty red card.
Awful tackle that was, wasn't it? Crikey.
Well, looked a bit of an off the ball, looked a bit of a stamp, didn't it, off the ball. But look, among their own support base, Carlisle fans are saying this is the least likable Carlisle team in history. You know, they've been down before, remember. They hate this bunch of players. They don't think they work hard. They don't
insert
like their attitude.
Line about Clarkie's loan spell there.
That was a pretty bad team, I've got to say. And I wasn't very good either. But this is a really, really bad team. And a lot of the blame is going on the director of football and for terrible recruitment. Because as Sam's been saying all season, Carlisle have spent lots of money, but they've spent it on rubbish, really, or players that don't appear to want to be there. So, yeah, they're gone. Chesterfield are in with a shout. They're on the charge, aren't they? 4 points off the playoffs, unbeaten in six. They've won 5 of those 6. Second top scorers. Another team like Port Vale and others that are good at set pieces, and they're getting their players back, you know, from injury. They've had a lot of players injured. This was a first start as well for John Fleck, former Fantasy League favourite. John Fleck, what was he, a 4.5 bargain, wasn't he, back in the day?
Robert's Sheffield nephew?
United. Yes.
I believe,
he was, wasn't he, for Sheffield United? He now finds himself at Chesterfield. 8 sub appearances before this one, and he started and played well. So, yeah, Chesterfield's got a sniff at it, unlike Carlisle.
We did think they might be in contention at the start of the season, picking up at the right time, it would seem. All right, that was the midweek. Next today, we'll turn our attention to the pick of the weekend's championship action. Two promotion chasers meet in the West Midlands with Burnley, hoping their game against Coventry won't be a dress rehearsal for the playoffs. Cov looking to recover quickly from the disappointment of defeat at Sheffield United, whilst the Clarets are only behind second Leeds on goal difference, having not lost the league game since the 3rd of November. Let's stick with tradition though, Sam, and start with the home team. Comprehensively beaten at Bramall Lane, but still won 10 of their last 13, 30 points from 39, yet they're only, 2 points clear of those chasing them for a playoff place. Are they going to make it?
Yeah, I'm still pretty convinced they will, albeit when you look at the numbers and the table, they've still got a lot of work to do. And yeah, the back-to-back away defeats, I think, coming at, you know, a bad time for them when they've got real rhythm at home. 4 straight wins, 8 wins in 10. At home, so a little bit contrasting. I don't think there's anything alarming there, but they didn't turn up at Derby and beaten far and away by the better side at Sheffield United. So yeah, there's going to be some eyes on them here. Got a problem in goal. Dovin is injured. Not sure what the script is with Wilson, but potentially him or Collins will be in goal. And I think they've got great firepower. Coventry. Obviously, Hadji Wright got that hat trick against Sunderland last time out at home. It's getting him, Rodoni, Sakamoto, Sims, Ephraim Mason-Clark. How do you get, you know, four of those guys in the team? How are they going to line up? It may mean Hadji Wright playing off the left. I think Rodoni's been a standout player for him when he's been available. I'm sure Frank Lampard would want him in there in an attacking midfield role. So the setup's going to be interesting, but also the game plan. I'm going to be working on this one. I think probably every coach has been incredibly challenged when they come up against Burnley this year, because if you open up, Burnley will pick you off on the counter-attack. I think if they allow you to have the ball, maybe utilising the power and utilising the physicality, the size of Sims, Hadji Wright, maybe a good tactic here. So going a little bit longer, maybe set pieces could come into play. Coventry scored the most headed goals across the season, 18, albeit up against a formidable defence against Burnley. So I'm really intrigued to see how they approach it. And I'm going to see Coventry in back-to-back games, and they've got a lot of difficult games coming up. Pompey on Wednesday, they're probably not quite going to be safe yet, Portsmouth, although I believe they will get there pretty soon. But other than that, tough end of the season, everyone with something to play for, including the weekend. So, as ever, not many goals, I don't think, in this one. Probably going to be a low-scoring draw, or maybe decided by a bit of brilliance one way.
Well, Burnley are going to have Scott Parker back on the touchline. He served a ban in the win against Bristol City. Clarkie, Burnley have lost two league games this season. Liverpool have only lost one. I went down as far as the National League South. I couldn't find anybody else who's got anywhere near as few defeats. I feel like we haven't focused on that because we've been so bothered about the clean sheet record, but it's pretty extraordinary to be this far into the season and have that few L's against your name.
Definitely. They're 26 unbeaten in the league as well, Burnley. You know, Scott Parker, for whatever reason, people want to hate on him, I think. I don't really get it.
The McDonald's advert, was it all those years ago?
I don't know. I mean, I know play for Chelsea, that makes him instantly dislikable.
I played against him very, very soon after that advert or during, you know, that period.
I bet everyone was calling him Jimmy on the pitch, right?
I just remember him turning up at Arlington, Chelsea's old training ground, and he was unbelievable. It was like
so
sensational.
So how old were you then?
13, 14. Yeah. I remember the two that stand out are him that day and Joe Cole once turned out. I mean, this is a bit hazy, but Joe Cole, I think, once turned out kind of on trial. I say trial through gritted teeth because I was being really polite to him and welcoming to Chelsea. I'd been part of the furniture there for a couple of years, and then he proceeded to go out and put on a display like I've never seen the like of since. He was unbelievable. Didn't see him again, obviously, ended up at West Ham. But yeah, Scott Parker as a 13, 14 year old, what a player.
Yeah, no, good. I think he's a good bloke. I think he's a very impressive manager. He's got a good togetherness there at Burnley. Seemed like good spirit. I mean, you don't go that long unbeaten if you haven't got a good togetherness. You said it'd be low scoring. Well, Burnley away against top eight teams this season. 1-3, drawn 2, lost 1. But in that run of 6 matches, conceded 1 goal away from home to the top eight. That was in August at Sunderland. The only match out of all of those that featured more than one single goal was a 2-0 win at Bramall Lane from Burnley. So, you know, there's every chance this is a 0-0 or a 1-0. More likely to be Burnley, I'd imagine. I think Sam's right. I think if there's a weakness, it might be physicality in the air. Steven Egan Rielly are very, really good, but maybe not that dominant. The keeper in the Premier League was definitely found out aerially. And I'm not completely sold that he's over that and that he's fixed it. So I would absolutely test Trafford here. But the thing that sticks in my head is Coventry got schooled by Leeds at the CBS. And they got schooled by Sheffield United the other night at Bramall Lane. And I put Burnley absolutely at least on level par with Leeds and Sheffield United. So I think Burnley will win the game. I do, even though Coventry are a good side. So, yeah, Burnley to win it 1-0. Probably Josh Brownhill breaking into the box from midfield to tuck home a one-touch finish. There you go.
Lampard-esque. from Brownhill, maybe then. Loads of great games in the Championship this weekend. I am obliged to ask if Leeds are choking. Not according to Daniel Farker, who said after last weekend's drop points against Swansea that he is 100% convinced that next season we will play in the Premier League. With Burnley breathing down their necks, Farker's folks could really do with a W at Luton on Saturday, but the Hatters need for 3 points just as great. Adrian, it's not guaranteed by any means, but they've given them a fighting, given themselves a fighting chance. What, 3 points from safety ahead of this game?
Yeah, they have. Obviously, a 0-0 with Middlesbrough in the last home game will give them a bit of confidence offensively. Obviously, a clean sheet at Hull. Yeah, she's rightly said, very jammy winner. You know, a Hull defender whacking it against another Hull player for it to go in as an own goal. I watched the game at Cardiff that they won. Excellent second half performance there. So no, Luton have found something, haven't they? Found a bit of defensive solidity, which is well timed. The goalie was very good at Hull, Kaminski. Reece Burke, maybe him coming back at Hull was a good one as well, because I think it was his first start in a long, long time. Mark McGuinness, who's strange, he was on the bench for a couple of games, but he's back in and dominating. And Jordan Clark, I think over the last three games, has also been really, really good. I don't know if you see Tahit Chong is also fit now. I think he came off the bench the other day, so that's a real boost for them ahead of a game like this. But I suppose when you're playing Leeds, it's really about, you know, can you contain them? And, you know, over the course of this season, you'd probably say they're up against it. But I was looking at it, and I was there for that Burnley tonking on the opening night, 4-1. Since then, yeah, they've lost some games, but never by more than one goal. There's a lot of draws, a lot of wins in there as well. So actually, at Kenilworth Road, you know, most teams haven't found it easy. So, and I don't think Leeds will. And Luton, let's face it, have the tools to cause Leeds one or two nervy moments, especially the goalie. We don't know what's going to happen, who's going to get picked, if it's Melier.
Well, let me interrupt you. Daniel Farker's press conference has taken place as we were recording, and okay. He says, I'm a big believer in clarity at goalkeeper. I already told Carl Darlow he'll start on Saturday. Ilan Melier will be on the bench.
Yeah, I think it's right, first and foremost. Melier's made too many rickets, and it's almost unfair to keep putting him in the firing line under too much pressure. But Darlow is undercooked, so I would still say that Luton should get the ball in the mixer, as I said, it's the second time he used it today, and really test him and you know, put him under pressure. So and with the two big centre forwards, they've got an opportunity to go and do that in this game. So yeah, I mean, Leeds are favourites for a reason, but I actually think Luton are capable here of being competitive and maybe taking points off of Farker's side. There's a lot of pressure on Leeds ahead of this game, and last season when put under pressure they crumbled a bit, didn't they? So let's see what they're made of now.
Yeah, big run coming up for Luton. Next three games, Stoke, Blackburn and Derby, all look winnable. Leeds, one win in five then, Sam. Are they going to end up in the playoffs again?
Well, I think that'll be the fear, won't it, from the supporters. I'd say the quick look there. They lost four out of their last six last season. I know there's a few more games to go, and I'm not sure too how many of the players you know, were playing, churning out 90 minutes that are still at the club last season. But it's a huge issue. I'm glad we got some clarity on the goalkeeper. Don't know what you felt, Clarkey. Obviously, the first one's a horrendous mistake. The second one, though, as well. I mean, it's a nicely crafted goal. There's a few mistakes in there prior to Vipotnik getting in for the strike. But I think from that angle, he probably has to do a little bit better as well, the goalkeeper. I'd expect Nonto to come back in. Tanaka, this was because of international duty that he shuffled the pack against Swansea. Firpo as well. And I just kind of reflect on the season as a whole. And I know Pirou scored some wonderful goals, none more so than that goal at Bramall Lane recently. But he's 1 in 7. He's not scored in his last five, I don't think, Pirou. And Joseph, for all the promise at the early part of the season, he's not really prospered either. So I don't think there's a number of forward players in form. And they go into a place where Clarkey rightly says that you can use the facilities, the dimensions, they can put them under pressure. This is a tough game for Leeds. And if I could just tell you one quick anecdote. I played in the Luton team struggling against relegation against Leeds going for promotion 2009, and it was a tough game for Leeds, and the supporters absolutely love it, and I think they'll get behind Luton. I think there'll be a little bit of belief all of a sudden after the last few games. It was 1-1, Parkin equaliser, 81st minute.
I knew that was coming. Yeah.
Of course it was. It was after 18 months on the sidelines, though, Clarkey. So I wanted to tell the story because I sat in the car park afterwards and sobbed my eyes out because I never thought I would score, play again, let alone score a goal. So, yeah, very happy memories.
Lovely stuff. Right, final game in the Championship for us to look ahead to is between West Brom and Sunderland. This is nuts, Clarkey. Two places between them in the table, but 15 points is the gap between them. Tony Mowbray facing one of his old clubs. It's been a bit up and down for him, hasn't it, since he took over at West Brom, replacing Carlos Corberan, struggling for consistency.
Yeah, mixed bag, isn't it, for Mowbray's Albion? Yeah, win one, draw one, lose one. You know, too many drop points probably at the Hawthorns as well. He hasn't quite found the right combo in forward areas. He's got a lot to choose from. That's the problem. Sometimes that's an issue, isn't it, in terms of a negative? Because if you've got too many good options, you can end up fiddling around with it and no one gets their rhythm. There's a lot of talk, I think, that Mikey Johnston might come in for this one after doing well at Norwich, off the bench. Fellows, for me, would start every game, even though he doesn't, just because he's got good end product. One interesting change that he's made of late is to put Jason Malumbi kind of as a support striker. You know, a lot of people have been saying it's a 4-4-2 with Malumbi and Armstrong, which just sounds a bit weird to me, but that's how they've done it. Yeah, if Johnston comes in, of course, what do you do with Grant? Will he play instead of Armstrong, who's only scored a couple of goals, I think, since coming in? I personally wouldn't leave him out. I think the tools are there for West Brom to score a lot more goals. You've got a really good poacher, a great finisher, and then you've got excellent wingers. You know, everywhere you look, there's a decent winger at the Hawthorns. So, yeah, I think they should be doing a lot better in the attacking department. 9 teams have scored more goals than West Brom this season. And you can't blame finishing because the expected goals is exactly the same. The 10th. So, you know, given the quality of their attackers, that's not right, really. But yeah, no, be a good, interesting game. Good time maybe to play Sunderland. They're not at their very best, are they? I don't think it will look like there's 15 points between these two. In fact, I'd go as far as to say Sunderland will have to play very well to win this game.
The big news around Sunderland this week, Sam, has been the fact that Tom Watson's going to join Brighton for £10 million quid in the summer. He's only 18. I was going to ask you what kind of impact that would have on him and the team for the rest of the season, but he's not exactly a regular, is he? 7 starts, 7 subs in the league so far this season, so it shouldn't ruffle them too much.
Yeah, he came in and then got injured, didn't he, pretty much? Had that stellar performance at Bramall Lane, if memory serves me right, which was incredibly exciting. I have spoken to some people in the game about him just by chance recently. I think everyone was looking at him. I think he's supposed to be a top talent. So no surprise, given that I'd had those conversations, that it looks like he's moving on. Yeah, it doesn't leave a particularly good taste in the mouth of Sunderland supporters. I think they're really disappointed to lose one of their prized assets. But yeah, they've got Lafay obviously coming back, I think, for this one. I think Ballard and Sirkin nearing full fitness as well. So almost full strength. They had Alan Brown at right back against Millwall. So they may have that kind of Hume and Sirkin, really reliable fullbacks back in place for this one at West Brom. Despite Tony Mowbray being in there now, it still feels like the games at the Hawthorns have been particularly tight. The last few, quite low scoring. I'm expecting that again. And Sunderland, yeah, it's just about the manager. I don't know. Boxing clever, he want to keep that momentum, but you've got to refresh the players, haven't you? So maybe Lafay, as anticipated, he may have a part to play centrally. It might mean Neil Bellingham, Rigg, missing a little bit of football in the weeks ahead as they prepare for the playoffs. But yeah, not concerned about them. They're going to be really strong going into the playoffs, given how much time they've had to prepare.
Would either of you fancy the draw here?
Yes, potentially. 1-1.
I only say that because West Brom, versus the top four this season, 7 matches, 7 draws.
Okay, well, I'll upgrade that to yes, definitely then. I mean, they've drawn 18 of 39 games so far, have the Albion. I mean, that's a prediction of sorts. It does lead us, therefore, quite nicely onto our predictions as we head toward the end of the show. Last week, I was the only person who got a perfect score. I said it would be 4-1 between Birmingham and Shrewsbury, and that meant that I finished with 3 points and Sam and Adrian got 2 each. So I've got to be at least reeling you in, Clarkie, if not Sam.
You are. Look, Sam's ahead. Sam's way in the distance. He's got 60 points. He's champions elect. He's the Birmingham. I'm probably Wickham, even though I'm ahead of you at the minute. I'm on 45, but not in good form. You're on 43, Matt. So you could be the Wrexham that sort of, ends up getting promoted with Sam and I stay in the lower leagues. Let's wait and see.
All right, massive few minutes coming up then. You can go first, Clarkie. QPR against Cardiff from the Championship. What's going to happen?
Stinks a 1-0, doesn't it?
Sam?
I do like the draw here. I've spoken far too much about myself on today's podcast, so I'm just going to whiz for it. 2-1 Rangers.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. I'll go for 3-1. In that case, Wrexham Burton's next up. Sam, what's going to happen here?
Oh, Wrexham 2, Terry Burton 0.
There it is. Yeah, what the FL bingo. I think that Burton will get a goal here and make it a little awkward, but Wrexham, I'm going to go 3-1 again, you know. How about that? Clarkie?
Bold. Yeah, I had 2-0, so I'm going to have to change on the hoof. Let's go with tense. Wrexham 1, Burton 0.
Nice. Finally, from League 2, Fleetwood against Swindon. I feel like there might be goals in this, and I'm going to say that it's going to be 2-2. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, I like that as well. Reverse psychology here. A lot of draws for Swindon recently, so you might be on something there, Matt. 2-1 Fleetwood. Sorry.
Home win for the COD Army. What say you, Clarkie?
Yeah, I'm going to go 3-1 Fleetwood.
Ooh, bold. But you've got to be at this stage of the season.
Got to be, yeah.
All right, before we go, let me remind you again about that offer from our sponsors. Quinbet have an offer just for you. You can get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum 3 bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account is up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Now then, I'm indebted to Sam for picking out this week's tweet of the week for us. It comes from Mandela Egbo, and this is absolutely superb. He plays for Colchester United, who tweeted after the weekend, we go again tomorrow. It was after the weekend, if you're that bothered about it, 31st of March. We go again tomorrow. Muscly arm emoji, hashtag Cole U, line, hashtag We Are United. And then with a picture of Mandelo in action with the ball at his feet. He has tweeted this saying, kick this out of play, sad face emoji. We go again, prayer emoji. It's superb, Sam. I'm sure that's why you've picked it out. What I particularly like about this, having not been familiar with this player, is that in his bio, he describes himself simply as Love Island commentator and pundit.
I think he's got previous for this type of thing. I remember him having a bit of character when he was down at the County Ground, which I think he appeared after a stint at New York Red Bulls, possibly, if memory serves, now residing in Essex. But yeah, like the cut of his jib, I almost prefer the second line. We love self-deprecation, so kick this out of play is tremendous, but then the we go again, just mocking the entirety of the football world in his second line. Very, very good.
I mean, this is a sort of up there for tweet of the season for me, Clarkie. What say you?
Yeah, absolutely. Faultless from the boy Egbo, who might be a goonie, you know. I know it's on the 21st of March.
A bit of love for Miles Lewis Skelly there, isn't
there? Yeah, our boy MLS. I don't know, what face do you call that one? It's a sort of googly-eyed face and a love heart. So yeah, if he's a gooner as well, then he gets 11 out of 10 for that.
Well done, Mandela. You can find him, Mandela _E, if you want to add to his 6,242 followers. That is where we're going to leave things for today, though. Many thanks to Adrian and Sam for their expertise, and to you for your company. We'll do it all again next week. For now, though, it's goodbye.